This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 247, brought to you by InStock Trades and iFanboy listeners like you. I put up my face, I tore my wound, read my own rights and I filled them with gloom. I turned the commercial into a creep show. I peeped at the gods with their bodies all day glow. It's summertime, and it's the time. Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 247. My name is Ron Richards, and as always, I'm here to my left with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
How you doing, Connor?
Good. How are you, Ron?
Good, good. Guess who's not here?
Josh Flanagan.
Guess who is here?
Tom Caters.
Tom Caters.
Hello.
How you doing?
How are you?
Welcome back, Tom.
Thanks.
Josh in your basement?
I can see Josh right now, and he looks like he's just about ready to fall asleep.
Little angel.
Yeah. He's tired. He's been struggling.
So we are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website that's all about the wonderful world of comic books and comic book culture and all that fun stuff. And every week we read a whole big stack of comics, and one of us picks what we feel as if was the best comic or the comic that we most enjoyed that week and dubs it the pick of the week. And we come back here to talk about it, as well as a bunch of other issues, as well as comic book related miscellanea. So
minutia,
that's what I was looking for.
Crap.
So before we get to the show, quick warning, we're going to talk about what happens in the book. So if you don't want your comic spoiled, then press pause, come back after it's done, after you've done reading, you can listen to the rest of the show. Or if you don't mind it being spoiled, then keep on listening and enjoy the mayhem. Connor, you had the pick this week, and I got to admit, you surprised me.
Well, a quick note before I get to the pick of the week.
Oh, yes.
And this isn't, this is no way to denigrate the pick of the week, but one of my favorite books is Thor Mighty Avenger, and it didn't ship to Brooklyn this week.
Ooh, so you didn't get it.
I went to three or four stores, and no one had it. So, not to denigrate the pick, which was a great book, but when I saw that on the list, I saw there was a small week. I thought maybe it would be the week for Thor, but
next
didn't happen. Morning Glory is number one was the pick of the week, and it was great. It probably would have been pick anyway. I'm just saying I didn't get to read Thor, so if anybody asks, I didn't get to read it. Nick Spencer is the writer. Joe
Eisma.
Eisma is the is the artist. And Nick Spencer is someone who's really sort of burst on the scene in the last year. He's written like four books from Image in the last year and a half. And he wrote a book called Forgetless that Ron and I both really liked a lot. And so when Morning Glories was announced, I had my eye on it, but I didn't really look into it very much. Like, a bunch of teaser images came out, and I liked the art, and I liked the cover, which is a really striking image of kids in a boarding school. And but beyond that, I didn't do any research. I didn't look into it. We did a show with him, a Don't Miss show. I didn't listen to that. I went in totally clean, not knowing a thing about Morning Glories, just about that it was about kids at a boarding school. So that was one of the things I really liked about it, which was... was totally surprised. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't read the solicitations. You know, in this modern age of knowing everything that comes three months down the road, it was totally nice to not know anything going into a book. You know, not knowing who the Spider-Man character is. You know, pretty much know everything that's going to happen. It was nice to have a surprise. But even without a surprise, I thought this was what Spencer did here was create a really engaging mystery. In this first issue, we have a bunch of kids who are in a boarding school, and the boarding school is much more sinister than it appears to be. In the very opening scene, you have a typical, you know, classroom scene where the kids are passing notes and the teacher gets mad, and then suddenly there's an explosion and the kids make a break for it, and then they try to escape the school, and they bust out, and you find they're not in a school at all, they're in a warehouse. And then we cut to the new kids coming in. And so now you're wondering, what the hell's going on here? What is up with the school? Why is it not really a school? Who are these kids? And who are these teachers? And why is there some kind of ghost creature who killed the kid who tried to leave? And it created a really nice mystery story. I mean, the great thing about a mystery is if it gives you just, in the beginning, gives you just enough to wonder what's going to happen and not too much to have it, you know, spoiled. You don't want too much information in the beginning. You want to ask a lot of questions. You want those questions to be interesting enough to want to know the answers. And I thought Nick Spencer did a great job, A, introducing these new characters. He introduced, I think it's 6 new students coming in, and he did a good job of setting up the mystery. And then Joe Eastman's art was really solid. He did a really good job of dynamic action, the scenes in the beginning with the explosions and the running and the fight, the ghosts and all that stuff. And he also did a good job with the students. I felt like I had a handle on the personalities through their appearance and then through the words, Nick Spencer's words. It was just a really nice, well-rounded story that I really was engaged by. And by the end of it, more than any other book I read this week, when I finished, I really wanted to get the next chapter. And that's the sign of a really good single issue, is that you want to get to the next part. You want to know what's going to happen next. And I really thought it was funny, it was smart, it was engaging, and the cliffhanger was a nice one. It was a nice, you know, surprise and sort of disturbing moment in the series or the story. I really liked it a lot. Did you guys read it?
Of course. Tom?
Did you like it?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I was really... something that people complain a lot about in comics, you often see people sort of not happy about, like, static shots, you know, where it's the same, close to the same panel used over and over again. And it was used really effectively in this issue because it was used with a touch of humor and levity, which is where I think it usually works best. And it would work the scene where they're getting driven by the, like, driver to the boarding school, and you see each student in the back, you know, getting knocked up by sleeping gas, I assume, of some type. Or they're all like me and they just fall asleep in a car. Immediately.
Me too. But, every I'm in the cab going to work today and I almost fell asleep.
Oh, Ron. and using stuff like that, repetition, to show the differences between all the characters, because you don't have costumes, you know, in a book like this. It can be a shorthand in your sort of standard superhero book, is the big gaudy costumes make it easy to tell who's who. So it was really effective in really nailing home which character is which and what they're like and how they're different.
Yeah. I thought I was, like I said, kind of surprised that you picked it. I thought it was really, really good. I haven't decided what my pick of the week is, but this one's really close just because it's, how many pages? Like 40 some odd pages. Like, it was packed. Like, you got a ton of comic for your money. But what made me think about this most, and Connor, why I wasn't surprised that you picked it when I thought about it, is that if this was the elevator pitch for a TV show this fall, you'd be watching the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
this is the kind of thing I love. I love mystery stories, and it should be no different in comics. You know, comics don't have to do one thing very well. They can do lots of things very well, and this is just another thing.
Exactly.
We read so many comics, and this is not to say the ones that we read all the time are bad, but it's always nice to read something new and interesting.
Yeah.
And always elevates a little bit. And I like Nick Spencer a lot because his books all seem different. There's usually an element of crime or mystery to them, but that doesn't mean that's the same. This is different than Forgetless. This is different than Shuttertown. This is I didn't read Existence, but it seems, from what you tell me about it, it seems different too.
Yep. Totally.
So I like that he's versatile in that way. I think from what I've read, it's all been really good, and I think he's probably somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah,
he's already getting DC jobs, and he might be one of the next big guys.
Well, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, he's definitely following the Hickman school of breaking into comics, which is, you go to Image, do some really high concept, interesting things. And if you look at what he's done, I mean, like, each of those books, none of those books were one genre. Like, he hasn't done superhero books yet. So like with Existence, it was like a little bit of science fiction and crime. With Forgetless, it was a little bit of teen romance and teen, not so much romance, but teen kind of youth culture and crime. Morning Glories is that teen kind of youth culture and a mystery. Like, he's combining those genres to come up with some really interesting ideas. And I think it's going to be really interesting now that he's doing Thunder Agents for DC, as well as the what is he doing? He's doing the
Jimmy Olsen.
The Jimmy Olsen backups. And he's been doing stuff at Marvel. I don't remember exactly what, or it hasn't been announced yet, and I'm not supposed to talk about it, but I forget. But one of those things. He's doing something at Marvel. So the thing is that, like, you know, he's going to move up to do the mainstream books. I'll be curious to see how he carries those genre bending ideas in the superhero world, because that's a lot less free than the Image Comics world. You know what I mean?
And I think if you, I saw people talk about this before it came out, saying, I don't want to read a book about kids at a boarding school. And that's really not the point. It's just, that's just the setting. It's a mystery. It's about these kids who think they're going to a school and they're actually going to some sort of strange prison thing. Environment that we don't really know what it is yet, and that's the story. It's not about the uniforms and the money. It's about the setting.
It's never about the money, Connor. It's never about the money.
It's never. I did like that. It kind of avoided the problem that Vertigo series like this avoid, where the first 12 issues would have been figuring out getting to the point at the end of this issue where they kind of string out the mystery part for too long. And this, we kind of got like right to something right away in one issue. You know, you're immediately suspicious about why they're at the school instead of slowly laying it out over time. And I thought it was more immediate and definitely more grabbing in that sense.
Yeah. And there was lots of interesting twists of tone, which worked really well. You know, you had really, you know, high action drama, and then you slowed down really, and you got to sort of humorous stuff where you met the characters, and they had sort of the teen romance set up. And then that went right into came right out of the disturbing moment where the girl calls home and their parents claim that does not know who she is.
Love that. I talked about it with Nick on the Don't Miss. I don't know if you've gone back and listened to it yet or not, Connor, but we talked about that specific page. I love that full page of her face on the phone, and by sliding slivers of her face up to make different panels, but it's the same image, really got across the feeling of that scene. I thought that was really, really, that was like art. And this is the best of comics. It's all coming together. Yeah. The art and the dialogue coming, because that's just a girl on the phone, you know. Yeah. Like, yeah. So,
but it was a chilling and sort of dynamic page, even though it was just a girl holding a phone. Yeah. And then the very end of the final scene is sort of horrific. So he really flies all over the map in terms of tone, but it all works together because the characters are interesting and the setting is interesting.
Yeah, totally.
I really liked this a lot. I was really impressed by it. Cool. I knew I'd probably like it, but I was really happy when I finished reading it.
And this is an ongoing. I mean, this is the other ones he's done have been miniseries, and this one is going to be a long story, from what he said. So,
cool.
Hopefully, it'll continue this streak.
There was lots of good stuff this week.
It was a really good week.
I really enjoyed Ultimate Spider-Man 13, which is the part 5 of 6 of the Chameleon story. I think the last time Tom was on, we talked about Amazing Spider-Man book where Aunt May was possessed and how uncomfortable it made us feel.
Right.
She yelled at Peter.
Yep.
It's the same way when Chameleon shows up and wrecks everyone's life. I'm always just like, oh, stop it.
This is fantastic.
Stop wrecking their lives.
Yeah.
This is great. And then, you know, something big happens in this issue, and I don't know if it's real, because when the Chameleon's around, you never really know what's real and what's not.
It looks to be real. I mean,
it looks to be real, but I just don't want to definitively say it's real until we know for sure.
Right? Are we not spoiling it? Or
no, I'm just saying in this issue, up to now we've had Chameleon coming in wrecking Peter's life. He kidnapped J. Jonah Jameson. He kidnapped Peter Parker, and he's running around as Peter Parker, as Spider-Man, robbing banks and ruining his reputation.
No.
And in this issue, the Chameleon calls his partner, who is an attractive, also faceless
Lady Chameleon,
featured in the best panel of the week feature on iFanboy.
Ooh.
And decides that he thought Jonah was a valuable hostage, but now it realizes that Peter's the valuable hostage, so he just has his lady partner, which I don't know why I'm saying lady partner. Partner. Because it's comics. It's like, if she was black, I'd say black partner.
Anyway.
Shoot Jonah in the head. So apparently he's dead.
To try to get Peter to play ball. So.
Right.
I think the story with Ultimate Spider-Man, it breaks my heart, and I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to verify whether this is true or not, but I think it is, but La Fuente is just killing it on this book. The two-page spread of
the webs,
the Chameleon as Spider-Man after he's robbed all the banks, and the webs coming out of him with the different shadows. Like, he's just killing it with this. And even the scenes with just Peter and Jonah tied up talking, and where Jonah reveals that he knows Spider-Man's identity, and, you know, Peter's like, shut up, not here. You know, like, he's handling the Bendis' pacing so well. They're working so well together. And if what I heard that he's leaving the book is true, I'm going to be really sad. I think Sarah Pacelli's taken over. Who's not bad. She's really good too. But But I just, like, for me, like, the story is great. I love the chameleon, the uncomfortableness, but I love, love, love La Fuente's art. So
I agree.
Yeah. I have nothing to say about Superman 702. Sorry.
There's so much to say.
I will be honest that I flipped through it at the store and I saw that he's in Detroit now, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And from what I saw, he walked down the street and he's just saying he's the crazy guy in the street who says hi to you. He's like, hi. And
oh, you mean a nice guy? I know. For you, you know, coastal elites, it's hard to imagine that.
But then
hello to you on the street.
He goes to a playground and proceeds to school some kids in basketball.
Well, he it's does let one gun. Yeah. Well, to me, this was like there was a good comic in these 22 pages, but it did not involve the basketball game. It's just. I mean, I don't know about you, Connor, but I find the way JMS writes Superman when he's talking to normal people, like, it's infuriating.
It's
like,
creepy. It's weird.
It's weird. It's like this weird, like, aggressive naivete towards, like, normal people.
Yeah.
You know, like, not so much in this issue. This issue was actually way better than the last issue.
Yes, it was way better, but it was still...
When he was quoting Perot people, like, come on. Oh, like, get your anarchist mask and go hang out in the park with all the other teenagers. But in this issue, you know, it's the context thing. You know, when he's playing the basketball game, it doesn't feel genuine. It feels like Superman manipulating people.
Yeah.
But when we get to the other part of the book where it's him finding those aliens that are hiding in Detroit, I was like, oh, this is better because this is more the context in which Superman makes sense and that Superman doing Superman things, leading by example, makes sense instead of like spending time playing this basketball game and like letting one of the kids win. And it just made more sense once we got past the basketball part.
Yeah,
to the aliens.
It did seem more relevant, and then there was a little bit of action, so that was also. I don't need action. It's just, you know, it's just he literally is walking, and which is fine. It's still, to me, I can't get over the fact that no one seems to care that Superman's walking the Earth.
Yeah, like Kane. I did see that his feet did leave the ground in this issue, though. I did see him. He's not staying grounded. He was up in the air fighting when
The guy that was guarding the old car plant asked him to fly, you know, because he'd never seen anybody really fly, which I thought was nice. Yeah. I mean, that part of it, it's JMS has like a weird overt sincerity to what he writes. Like, it's too sincere. And it works when you write Thor, because Thor speaks like a ridiculously sincere Norse god. Yeah. But when you have to talk to normal people, it comes across creepy. It's not like your Superman should be like your brother. You know, you shouldn't be like a weird dad who's like scolding you or like handing out life lessons.
it's that the tone is weird. I did like the scene with the guy, the caretaker. And,
yeah, I thought that was nice.
But other than that, it's...
How many issues is this running?
I don't know.
Because
like for a year.
For a year? Well, okay, so if he made it from Philly to Detroit, that's like a 10-hour drive? Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe 12? So is he going to be in, like, Wyoming next? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out his pace. I thought the next issue would have been, like, Pennsylvania. I mean, would have been, like, Pittsburgh, you know?
He's going to get to Montana. It's going to be a whole issue of him walking with nothing.
Just going to whole issue empty interstate. It's going to be fucking I-70 or whatever.
Nebraska, just corn. And I say this as somebody who's driven across country. I don't mean to denigrate those areas. They're very lovely. Yeah, Montana's
no,
beautiful.
But you leave. Uh-huh. No, I'm sorry. You get past Ohio, and there's some stretches of nothing, like, which is great because, you know. It's
weird. I mean, this issue, he saves Detroit from economic blight, and it's just like
which we all know is fantasy. That's not gonna happen.
And I don't necessarily mind it. You know, it's happened in a lot of comics where things happen and then that would never happen. You know, like they save Africa, you know, from starvation. But in the context of where I'm reading it now, where I turn the news and everyone is out of work, it seems kind of bizarre to have it in a comic where he saves a whole town, you know, city's.
He's instilling hope.
Economy.
Though. Yeah.
So the incongruity between the real life and the page is stronger, just simply because of what's happening in our world. And it's not like the comic should always reflect the real world, but it's just the difference was magnified.
Yeah,
you know, I finished the comic and we're like, well, he saved Detroit and DCU, so that's fine.
so we got that going for us.
I did like the art.
Eddie Barrows was great. I think it was even better this than the last issue.
If he can avoid the basketball stuff or the quoting Thoreau stuff, it won't be bad. But those parts just leave you so. I want to slap Superman, and I don't think you should ever want to feel like that.
Apparently, he's going to Oz next. If you look at that last page with the weird, the way the hills are rolling and the big sun. Yeah.
Oh, so not the prison.
He's going to some sort of fantasy land where
it's called Wisconsin. it's a playground for it's guns and fireworks.
Jeez. So it'd be
great if he goes to a Packer game in the next.
Just the whole issue, just at a game. Yeah, that'd be good. So surprisingly, I think a real a front runner for my pick of the week was, surprisingly to me, was Steve Rogers' Super Soldier number 2, purely because of Eaglesham's art.
Oh, that was great.
I thought Eaglesham's art was it wasn't so much just the art, but it was the layouts. There was a couple of really cool, I've never seen Eaglesham do this with layouts, where when Steve was talking to Sharon and the panel was the speech bubble. Or when he was surveilling and the panel was the two eyes of the binoculars. It was stuff I didn't expect from Eaglesham.
He was surveilling in an oddly casual way.
Yeah, exactly.
I noticed that in his posture.
On the beach.
It's kind of in a picnic pose, which feels like it's not very defensive. If somebody jumped him from behind, he would be able to spring up really quickly.
I'm relaxing.
But the
good news was, in the end, the whole thing is there's a new super soldier serum out there. And at the end, Steve gets it taken away from him, so he's all skinny again. And luckily, he didn't have the 4-foot neck this time, as opposed to last
month. Yeah, I love the way Eaglesham is carrying with Fantastic, what he did Fantastic Four, carrying the Kirby-esque faces. I don't know, the whole thing just is great. This was beautiful. I found myself just looking at each page. The opening sequence where he jumped out of the building, that was great. Him coming out of the water, the fountain, it was really cool.
So. I have two thoughts. On the book, one is there's a brief scene where we flash back to World War II. We see, Cap in his rightful costume. And it just made me wish he was wearing it because he draws it really well, Eaglesham.
Yeah.
And two, much like Marvel's project, book is just not being talked about. Another bigger book that's just going under the radar because it's
But it's really good. It's really good. Quote, not,
it is good. I read it when I saw it was one of the picks. Yeah. And it was a solid, it's right in Brubaker's wheelhouse. Yeah. It's the Captain America covert operations, a lot of internal monologue, casual surveillance.
The casual surveillance is the best. Anyway.
Should have been that panel of the week. Oh, well. I decided after the last issue of Green Lantern Corps to drop that book. I enjoyed the first post-Tomasi issue, but not so much the second one. I decided just to let that one go, but I'm going to replace it with Green Lantern Emerald Warriors number 1, which I really enjoyed.
I knew you were going to like this.
I liked it a lot as well.
I heard it described in my shop as Vic Mackey as a Green Lantern.
Well, it's funny. If you would have told me 15 years ago that I would buy a Guy Gardner book,
I would have punched you in the face.
I would have challenged you to a fight right then and there for besmirching me. But what they've done with Guy Gardner has been sort of miraculous. A character who was basically comedy fodder in the 80s, and then they didn't know what to do with him.
He was a commentary on the Reagan era
hero.
He was a commentary on the Schwarzenegger, Stallone type of action hero.
And from the 90s, they had him be a thousand different things, and none of it made sense. And then they kind of rehabbed him to be, he's the tough guy cop type Green Lantern, and the whole intrigue part of what he's planning to do is very interesting. Now, my only criticism would be is I don't like it when books end with a last page that makes you think, should I know who this is?
Yes.
And I'm almost certain we don't know who that is, but it makes you feel like you should.
Listen, if you don't know who it is, none of us know who it is.
I think that's partially the era where we think we're supposed to know everything.
Yeah I think... And I don't know how you're supposed to avoid it. I sat there for a while who is this? I don't know who this is.
I think there was a time where they would just be, badass guy at the end. Now you're wondering if you missed something.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. But the only thing I didn't like as much, I liked the Guy Gardner stuff a lot. It was the Atrocitus stuff that wasn't as interested, simply because I think after the whole year of all the different core. I kind of just want to get back to the Green Lanterns.
I like Atrocitus, though. I like the Red Lanterns.
The name.
Yeah.
The
Wall of Skulls was creepy, and the Banshee that he sent off to work with, with the creepy, wings and the Catwoman head thing. I don't know. I like the fact that this is and the fact that it ends with Guy, you know, wiping a little blood from his mouth, and he's got the Red Lantern in the eyes. He's got the crazy Red Lantern eyes. You know, I like that they're going to teeter between the rage with inside Guy and teaming him up with the Red Lantern. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Sure, absolutely. It's just a little tiring, but what we should mention is Fernando Pizarin.
Yep, great.
Great in this.
Great. Yeah.
That fantastic two-page spread where Guy destroys the ship with the baseball bat in space was just mind-blowing.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
It was really nice looking. I love Guy driving up on a motorcycle, too.
Yeah.
That seems appropriate.
So over across the street over at Marvel in the latest disaster of Shadowland. I've crossed the line with Shadowland where I'm reading it just to see how this goes. You know,
it's like Superman.
Totally, exactly. This issue... unfortunately, was the victim of a really bad cover in my opinion. I forgot who did the cover. Oh, Cassaday did the cover. Wow, it's really bad.
You know what's interesting is if you, I mean we've been reading old Cassaday stuff lately. Yeah. I mean, just compared to the new stuff, he used to be one of my favorite artists. Now it just seems the same.
He's out of practice. Wow, I can't believe this is Cassaday. Anyway, Daredevil 509. It was co-written by Andy Diggle and Anthony Johnson, with art by Roberto De La Torre. And basically, this is, you know, similar to what's going on. You know, like Shadowland is the event book, and the main things you need to know are happening there. And these are the side kind of events. These are the side story. And this, you know, involves, you know, Dakota and Foggy getting attacked by Daredevil's ninjas and getting saved by Luke and Danny. And it leads right into Luke and Danny getting some of the other heroes to go confront Daredevil, which happened last issue in Shadowland. But the thing is that this issue wasn't that bad. I mean, again, like with Shadowland, it's like there's something awful and then something decent. The De La Torre art was great. I thought it was really good. It was dark. It was, you know, like it was totally the right tone. And there was the Typhoid Mary comes back and she's wearing a kick-ass Dead Kennedys jacket. but she joins up with Daredevil, you know, and Master Izzo is teamed up with Elektra and he sends Elektra back to New York to save Matt. And so Elektra's getting back involved. But, I don't know. Like I enjoyed this issue, so it's weird. So I'm just, you know, I'm keeping with the Shadowland just to see what happens. Am I the only one reading it?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, hey, it's all right. Someone's got it.
Exactly. I dropped off Daredevil when Brubaker ended.
Yeah. I'm just fascinated to see how it goes and just see what happens. And
I dropped off Daredevil when he went to France a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was bad. That was rough.
That was when I was like, all right.
That was rough. Although it was during Civil War, so he got out of town. That was smart.
Yeah.
But man, I can't believe this is Cassaday. It's really bad. Go look at it. It's really bad.
He did the cover for Superman too, which I thought was weird with him with the flag, which I was like, whoa.
At an odd angle, yeah.
Oh yeah, that was weird. That was Cassaday?
Yep.
Weird. Back off a little bit, you know.
He's doing the covers for Shadowland, Daredevil, and Superman.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the Shadowland cover was fine. This one, go online and look at Iron Fist and Luke Cage. It looks weird.
I'm gonna do it while you read the copy.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so like we mentioned, our website ifanboy.com is our home, and we love everyone who comes there and participates on there, and we thank everybody who has supported us, and we remind you that there are multiple ways to help support iFanboy to keep us around, and urge those of you who haven't to, you know, to kind of help out, help us keep the lights on. So go to ifanboy.com, click on those banners, you know, help, you know, buy products from our advertisers. Everything goes towards helping the bigger picture of things, so those advertisers are paying us so to expose you to their products, so check them out. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and that's where you can buy all of your books, your graphic novels, your clothes, your unmentionables, all that sort of stuff. It's all at Amazon. Ooh. If you click on the Amazon logo, it sends you to Amazon.com proper, and that's where, and you know, we get a little cut of what you buy. So we really appreciate everyone who shops at ifanboy.com/Amazon. You're definitely going to want to get your Fear Agent shirt at ifanboy.com/store. They're selling quickly, and so we want to make sure that everyone gets one before they go out of print. And stay tuned because we might have some other shirts coming down in the fall. So you want to get your Fear Agent shirt before you miss out. And finally, and the best way to help out iFanboy is to become a member. Just for $4 a month or $40 a year gets you an iFanboy membership, as well as a prize pack, which includes some pins and some stickers and some other surprises. And we send you a comic from our collection. It's not always a good comic. It's not always a bad comic, but it's a comic. So
it's a comic book.
It's a comic book. And if you
some
have
people got mayhem, I know that.
Yeah, that was awesome. And when you get your membership packets, we love the people who post pictures on Twitter and stuff like that. That's always awesome. So do that. But if you got a little more money to spend, you can chip in $10 a month or $100 a year, and that gets you the prize pack and the comic, as well as a special iFanboy T-shirt. For those of you who've been waiting on your membership packets, we ran out of the iFanboy member T-shirts. We're getting more printed, but we've got some alternatives for you. We're gonna be contacting you if we haven't already.
I already did.
Great, excellent. Cool. So we thank everybody for their patience. We're gonna have more member shirts coming in this fall, and telling you it's coming this September, we're going to be announcing some cool stuff around the iFanboy membership, so you definitely want to get on board and so you can partake in that. And iFanboy members are the ones who are eligible for giveaways. Later this show, we're going to be doing the Scott Pilgrim giveaway, as well as announcing talking about some of the other giveaways that are going on in August. We have giveaways planned into October, all the way up until the New York Comic Con, so you're going to want to definitely become a member so you can participate in those giveaways.
And is the Ron Richards sandwich girl finally coming together?
Yes, it is. I'm very, very excited. So go to iFanboy.com/store, and that's where you can sign up to be a member. And we thank everybody who is a member. We love our members. So,
Day Tripper number 9 of 10. So we're coming down to the end here, and this issue is there's a lot of metaphysical happening here. And I thought, oh no, is this where we're going to find out what's going on? But yeah. It was just a dream of an old dying man.
Or was it a dream?
Great.
Was it
yeah,
a dream?
I thought he sort of wakes up in the bed of his hospital, and then he gets up and goes to the beach.
Yeah.
But I don't need it to make sense. That's what I'm saying about this.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to use that synopsis to describe any book I haven't read. It turned out to be a dream of an old dying man.
This book is beautiful, though. It's really special. I can't wait till they wrap it up to see how they end it. And I love this book. So. And it just came out. Didn't number 8 just come out?
It feels like it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great.
Ultimate Avengers 3, number 1. They're going to the miniseries format on Ultimate Avengers. Uh-huh. They've been having different minis. This one is drawn by Steve Dillon.
Which was great.
It's which also was weird. Insane.
Yeah. Yes.
I'd like to get inside Mark Millar's head. For just a little while, he is the perfect writer for like an Ultimates book, Ultimate Universe book, because it's just great. There's vampires and people getting bit and sexy vampires and Blade jumping out a window, and it's all the best stuff in comics. And yes, it's kind of stupid, but comics are kind of stupid. I mean, that's kind of the way it goes. It's like a big. Silly superhero romp.
Yep. What I love is that they went through all the stuff in Ultimatum and killed off characters, and one of the things is they killed Daredevil. So we'll just make a new Daredevil. We'll find a blind redheaded kid, and we'll train him to be the new Daredevil.
Exactly. Looks and acts just like Matt Murdock.
Exactly.
It's not like Matt Murdock had any kind of presence in the old Ultimate Universe.
It's funny. It's weird, but I love Dillon, so it's fine.
It was weird to see him drawing these characters.
Yeah, it was weird.
Doesn't draw a good Hulk.
No, not so much. Well, Vampire Hulk.
Anyway. Vampire Hulk.
So,
last page, Captain America, of course.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. Mm.
But I think Dillon did a good job on it, and he's killing it over on Punisher Mac. So I mean, yeah I think we're in good Dillon. There was a couple of years where it was like when he was doing that Wolverine book where it was like, not so good Dillon. But now it's been good Dillon. So.
All right.
X-Force Sex and Violence number 2. It's a 3-issue miniseries. Now, I know I need to live by the Tom Cater's dictum of don't question it. And I know that I should not worry about continuity and things making
it's
up.
It's called Sex and Violence, Ron.
But in Jason Aaron's Wolverine book, Wolverine shacked up. He's got a girlfriend in San Francisco.
Yeah.
In X-Force Sex and Violence, he's having sex with Domino.
Listen, in the heat of battle... Hormones are raging. Haven't you seen any movie or TV show where this a man and a woman fighting together afterwards?
I have, but Wolverine wouldn't
get it on.
Wolverine wouldn't cheat on his girlfriend. That's all I'm saying.
What you are? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard you say. Of course, Wolverine would cheat. You're holding these mutants to a level of fidelity which I think is outrageous.
I just wanted to make sense continuity wise. No mention of I'm going to explain this to the girlfriend.
Of course, he wouldn't tell Domino.
don't tell Domino about your girl that you have a girlfriend.
You're trying to score.
You want a thought balloon above his head saying, I can't believe I'm cheating on my girlfriend with Domino?
Yes. Just one stray thought balloon that addresses it.
If you send it to me, I'll draw that panel in for you. So it all makes sense.
I just need it to make sense in my head.
You know, they haven't mentioned her in, like, at least
since Jason Aaron wrote. No, it's been like 6 months, maybe 3 months, 4 months or so. No, it was this spring. That's what it was.
The entire last arc she wasn't involved in. Yeah. And then
it was in spring when they introduced her. It was
you know what? That's like you're traveling. When you haven't mentioned in 6 months, it's, all bets are off.
It's not in the same zip code.
It's just not in the same book. Anything goes.
He's got a rep to maintain.
Yeah. Oh,
he's all adrenaline and testosterone.
Oh, God. Anyway, somebody change the subject.
BPRD, Hell on Earth, New World, long title, number one. I'm always on when the BPRD books come out, and I'm always like, let's talk about the BPRD books. And if you haven't been reading BPRD, the world got all messed up, like, for reals. And in BPRD, it'll actually stick where everything's all messed up. And now the BPRD works for the UN. Ooh. So there's sort of a new status quo to it. And some of the agents think that Abe Sapien's the Antichrist, you know, because it was sort of revealed that he might
he's
be
an illegal immigrant.
Yeah, that he's supremely evil. So Abe's sort of wandering around. And it's just it's a good start to a new era of the BPRD because it was very much a very long cycle of stories that sort of came to an end. And now it kind of feels like we're going to get off into a whole new cycle of stories from a very interesting beginning. And in a book where things that happen like stick around. So if you complain about that in your other comics, you should try BPRD.
Wasn't there just a whole string of World War II stories?
Those have been mixed in. There was the 1947 series that they kind of do in between BPRD series, the current time period BPRD series. And then there's some one shots that were like flashbacks to the War on Frogs.
Right.
Which is, now it's permanently being retitled BPRD Hell on Earth. You know, just so you know.
This stuff, is a new status quo.
Next level.
You know, I own the first trade, and I keep meaning to get the rest. And actually, about a month ago, my comic store guy almost talked me into buying the whole run, which is like 12 trades.
That's a lot.
But because I really like the art a lot, and I really like the world. I like Hellboy. I read those a trade, and I like the trade I read. I just keep meaning to do it, and it falls through the cracks. Now there's 12 of them, so now it's daunting.
Now it'll never happen.
Well, I literally almost bought $100 worth of trades.
Jesus, wow, like, that would have been a good day at the store.
I really want to read them, but
well, speaking of wanting to read things and slipping through the cracks, I read the first hardcover of Lock and Key after hearing everybody rave about it. I think you guys included. I know Niesman raved about it.
It was my copy.
Yeah, exactly, and it was good. It was good, but that's the last thing I've read. But Paul Montgomery, one of the other writers over at iFanboy, has been raving about this Lock and Key issue number one that came out this week. I forget the miniseries title, the subtitle of it, or whatever it is, but. So I went to the store and I flipped through it, and it just really I didn't read the story, so I'm not commenting on it in that regard. But the art just really impressed me because the book ended. It starts and finishes with a Bill Watterson tribute in that the characters are drawn in that Calvin and Hobbes kind of style, which is really cool. But that's not what got me. What got me was that the layout was the same page layout of a larger image on the background, and then. Three or four vertical panels stacked in a line down the middle of the page for every page of the book. It just looked so, and it was not so much innovative, but it just looked different than anything else I looked at. The art was really crisp, was really good, and just that changing of the paradigm, you know, like telling a story in that way, just really impressed me. So,
Lock and Key, Keys to the Kingdom. That's the new miniseries.
There you go. That's not a play on words.
Gabriel Rodriguez. He's really good. I read this really in good. Trade. I got the first two. The third one's on its way. Yeah. It's a really, really, really good book.
Really good. So,
yeah, I like Lock and Key.
Cool. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week. But a whole slew of other comics came out this week, and you read and reviewed a bunch, and you wrote reviews over on iFanboy.com. We want to highlight a couple. Our first one comes from O'Caroline. who reviewed Shadowland Blood on the Street, number one. And O'Caroline gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. So O'Caroline wrote, "I note that the Shadowland event is edited by Bill Roseman, who helped oversee the resurgence of the Cosmic Marvel books. What Shadowland and its tie-ins seem to be aiming for is something similar to what Annihilation, Guardians of the Galaxy, and its ilk have accomplished for cosmic characters. The story takes characters that many of us have never heard of, and most of us thought of in a long time. It reintroduces them and shows how they fit into the fictional universe, thus giving the world new dimensions and opening it up for different kinds of stories. It makes me wonder what's going to happen in the characters next, especially Misty and Silver Sable. The stories aren't going to be for everybody, but if you think they might be for you, it's worth checking out." So
you didn't get that one. You're not fully in the Shadowland.
I'm not. You see, I years ago I adopted a unless I'm really really invested in it, a no one offs kind of thing. Like after Civil War,
this isn't a one off. This is a mini series.
Well, yeah, no, but it's a mini series one off within the story, and I'm like, I just can't do that. Yeah, so I'll read the main book and the crossovers of the books I currently read, and that's it. Of course, I've gone back, like with Second Coming, like I went back and I bought the issues for Hellbound and bought them after the fact because I heard they were good. And they weren't, but whatever. So,
well, speaking of X-Men, Ryn, R-Y-N, reviewed X-Men number 2, give a story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And this is his entire review. "Second issue into a new run, you can't really expect anything major, but this issue felt really lacking. Even the big reveals just didn't really add up to anything for me. The art was good, but nothing special, and the story just felt so disconnected. But I guess that they had to do something like this to catch the readers up on what's been happening. We as the readers know that Dracula's dead, assuming you notice the title of the Death of Dracula one-shot. You don't really have to read it to know that. But the X-Men don't know what's going on, so for those who read the Death of Dracula, this issue will mostly feel like Blade explaining to you the comic, so not entirely interesting to me, if you ask me." I enjoyed this. I like this.
I was just going to say, I enjoyed it a lot, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I read Death of Dracula too. It didn't seem like a retread.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm very impressed that Victor Gishler is writing the X-Men really well. You know, because he's a established writer, and I wasn't quite sure how he'd do it, but he's got the character's tone and manner and the voice down. My only problem is, I love the scene at Wolverine and Colossus and stuff like that, but again, it's this continuity problem where Second Coming ended with Storm being all pissy at Wolverine for killing people with X-Force, and now it's like as if that never happened. You know, like
we've moved on to a new event, Ron.
No, but in the last issue of Second Coming, she's like, "Well, then we're done talking," and then.
But that was Second Coming. Now we're on to something new.
It's continuity, and it's important.
There is no continuity.
Where are the editors? So I don't know, but I enjoyed it too. I enjoyed it a lot. So
yeah, I really like this. I mean, the thing is with story information, sometimes it's not it's not about surprising you, the readers, but surprising the characters and finding how they react to the news. I mean, that's every reveal isn't meant to get you. Sometimes it's meant to get the characters, and that's just another way of telling a story. But it was good. I enjoyed it. This is the only X-Men book I'm reading. I like it.
Cool.
If you like it, wait for the trade. In stock trades, they got up to 37% off all their stock, which includes over 9,000 trade paperbacks that are in stock available for order now. They get free shipping on orders over $50, and new releases listed every Wednesday, with orders usually shipping within 48 hours from www.instocktrades.com. And now we can actually get some emails out of the way.
We're doing emails and voicemails. We've been behind, so we're catching up.
This is a packed show. So Adam L. writes and says, "I'm heading to Comic-Con Chicago and putting my list of things together to pick up. I'm really interested in the Alex Ross engineered Earth X universe, X and Paradise X. What are your thoughts on these books? Are they worth getting? Should I not waste my money?"
Oh, that's tough.
Was his follow up to Marvel? I mean, not directly, but it was his second project, wasn't it? It was his second.
No, I think it was his second bit. What happened was that he did Marvels in like 93, 94. Then he went to DC and did Kingdom Come in like 96, 97. And then he came back to Marvel. And I remember it was like 99, 2000 because I was in Connecticut. I remember that. And that was his like Kingdom Come for Marvel.
Yeah, it was Return to Marvel. And he didn't draw it. It was John Paul Leon. It looked really good.
No, wasn't it Braithwaite? I thought it was Rory Braithwaite.
I don't think so. I think it was Leon.
I think it was Jean-Paul Leon.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it was Braithwaite.
Leon did the first one, and then he didn't do any of the other ones.
And it wasn't and Bill Kruger wrote it.
Yeah.
And no offense to Bill Kruger, but he's not Mark Waid.
Earth X looked really nice. That's about the best I can say for it. I like Leon a lot. He's very shadow heavy and very moody. And it was about the future of the Marvel Universe where Peter Parker was fat.
Braithwaite did justice. That's what it is. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
You don't buy all three.
Yes, agreed.
Get one if you're interested.
Get Earth X. Yeah. That's because the first one, if I remember correctly, Paradise X wasn't so good.
I didn't even read Universe X or Paradise X, just Earth X.
The thing was that, like, the thing that got me was Kingdom Come And I'm not, I wasn't a DC fan at all. Connor, you can attest at the time period. Like, I wasn't, I mean, like, I was, it was the beginning of my DC time. And right. Kingdom Come captured my imagination and made me want to know more about the characters. And Earth X and the character interpretations of the Marvel characters in the future basically turned me off as quickly as you can turn me off. Like, it sickened me.
Wasn't it like arguing Wolverine, Fat Wolverine and
Jean, Fat Wolverine and, in a wife beater married to Jean Grey, and you got fat, like everyone was fat. Fat Peter Parker as a cop, fat Captain America in a toga. It was
the
like
the future of the Marvel universe is obesity.
Exactly.
Well, it parallels the real world in that sense. Tom,
fat Silver Surfer.
Yeah, everyone got fat. All right, we got an email from Mitch. Last night I was showing a friend an issue of Jonah Hex I thought he might enjoy. He asked me a couple of questions that made me think he was interested in reading comics. So I asked what he was looking for. He said he only wanted stories that he could get in issues number 1 or number 100. Uh-oh. Sensing where this was going, I asked why. He started telling me how it was rare for a lot of comics to reach issue number 100, how ones were worth more, and other comic BS that I have no idea where he got it from. It was clear he wasn't interested in the story. It's just the idea that one day they would be worth something. I told him that was a shitty reason to start a hobby like this, but he blew it off. So my question to you is, what method should I use to kill him? I was thinking of shoving a bunch of New Mutants Forever number 1 down his throat, but I'm open to new ideas. Not to a bunch of different X-Force number 1s. You could get the whole, you know, the whole set.
That took a weird turn at the end.
Now he's going to kill him. He's going to kill him, I think.
Sounds like
now, are we accomplices now, or?
Let him buy, like, 200 number 1 issues, and then in 10 years when he gets 10 cents a piece for them, You can have the satisfaction of laughing at him.
Well, that's maybe the greatest revenge of all. Help the comic store, and then you get to laugh at your friend.
Yeah, and maybe in the process of getting the issue 100, he might read them and actually like them and then become a good comic reader. You know?
Yeah. Encourage him to speculate.
Yeah, we need it. Lord knows we need it.
God, please.
Tell him to buy 100 copies of X-Men number 1, which just came out. It's $4 a piece. You know, he'll spend $400 on a comic that'll be worth 50 cents in the...
Or tell him to go buy 100 copies of Morning Glories number 1.
Yes, even better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Tell him it's Image, and Image was, you know, all about speculation. So.
Yeah, totally. Oh, God. Wow.
Your best revenge is laughing on the inside.
I like the I only buy issue number 1s and 100s. I thought it was going to be like an OCD thing.
That's a huge difference right in there. I gotta wait like 8 years until I can get the next issue of this book.
I don't know what's going on. Anyway.
What happened? I thought Peter and Mary Jane were married.
I certainly think Spider-Man learned his lesson in this issue. Oh, 100. Oh, my God. What happened?
Oh, God. I thought Magneto got arrested.
He's on the X-Men?
What?
Wolverine's fat?
Okay, so our last email comes from Carter, who's also Carter Morale on the site, on ifanboy.com. And he says, I went to my local comic book store today and saw a display of the New Avengers and the Mighty Avengers first trade on sale. I picked it up, flipped through the pages, and didn't really know which one to pick up. I noticed both were by Bendis, so I figured either would be a good buy, but wanted to get other people's opinion first. So the question is, what is the best Avenger series, and do you suggest any other superhero team series to pick up? I would go with New Avengers without it. I thought that was the superior Avengers book.
I'm going to offer a counter argument.
Ooh, yes, counter.
I think both traits are really good. I always liked Mighty Avengers better.
Really?
I think Bendis has a fantastic ear for dialogue and does a really good job of writing dialogue. Unfortunately, I think most superhero stories don't traditionally pace in a manner that allows that type of dialogue to happen. So you kind of have to shoehorn it in to a story, you know, either by having a lot of things explained by people talking or have moments that seem sort of separated from what's going on in order to fit that dialogue in. And I think Mighty Avengers was a really great mix between the action and his style of writing. Because he used, if you remember, he used thought balloons.
That was a big deal.
Which blew people away.
Yeah, exactly. I thought he did a great job with it.
And I thought that was, I was like, oh, this is I'm not the biggest Bendis Avengers fan in that I've never been able to stick with his new Avengers stuff. But I actually stuck with the new Avengers stuff, the Mighty Avengers stuff for a while because I liked what he was doing in that book a little bit better. So I would say the first new Avengers trade is really good. So I don't think you'll go wrong getting either one. But as a differing opinion at looking how Bendis writes.
If you go Mighty Avengers, you're going to get some good art. I mean, that's for sure.
Sure,
yes. And not to say that the art in New Avengers isn't bad, but, you know, I mean, but like that was a big thing. Like, it sucked waiting on those issues. Yeah. But Frank Cho as in a trade, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I think you can't go wrong with either, to be honest. You know,
they're both really good. Yeah. The first trades are both really good.
Yeah, so cool. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We'd love to hear from you. Send in the email. It's fantastic. It loves to. We drown in it. So, okay, on to the voicemail. Long-awaited voicemail. Our first question, I wasn't really expecting.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Adam from Des Moines. And I was just wondering who you would put on your Mount Rushmore of your favorite comic series. So, Ron, who's your top four Mount Rushmore X-Men? Connor, who's the four on the Batman universe, and Josh, who would you put in, say, a Vertigo Mount Rushmore? Thanks for taking my time. Have a nice night.
Does he mean characters or does he mean creators?
I thought characters.
See, I thought creators.
Ooh.
But,
let's do both. Let's do both.
Okay. So there's four on Mount Rushmore, right?
Yes.
Four heads.
Well, if you want to count Teddy Roosevelt. Whatever. That's the one that's like, really? Teddy Roosevelt?
Okay, so for the X-Men.
Okay, for the X-Men characters,
yeah.
It's got to be Professor Xavier,
yeah.
Cyclops, Wolverine, and probably Jean Grey, but I would want Kitty. So
this isn't Ron? Well, I guess it is Ron's.
It is, so screw you. And creators. No villains.
I don't. He was on the team.
Yeah, I know, but he's always that helmet is villainous.
It's got to be Jean Grey.
It's got to be Jean Grey, yeah. But I love a Kitty.
Phantom X.
Fuck you.
Maggot?
No, Maggot. So creators, it's got to be... I mean, it's tough because they're...
Claremont.
Well, yeah, of course Claremont and of course Byrne.
Jim Lee.
And then, you know, it's tough because Stan and Jack created them, but they don't... No, Neil Adams.
The stories were
Neil Adams.
Neil Adams more than...
Who?
Who did it before...
Paul Smith.
Cockrum.
Yeah, it's got to be Cockrum. Yeah, instead of Neil Adams. Yeah, Cockrum.
Right, so we got Claremont, Lee, Cockrum, and Byrne.
Yep.
I got three of those in my initial list.
Okay.
Because I'm awesome.
All right.
Batman creators, because I already did. I prepared. Obviously Bob Kane and Bill Finger.
Of course,
they created the character. Bill Finger doesn't get credit, but he actually created.
Bill Finger should have a bigger head than Bob Kane.
Bill Finger, well, nobody's head is bigger than Bob Kane, except for Neil Adams. Bill Finger created all the elements that you recognize as Batman now. Yep. He doesn't get any credit for it. Bob Kane did a lot, but Bill Finger really refined the character.
Bob Kane said a man and a bat.
Bob Kane, Bill Finger, Frank Miller, and I had Neil Adams. But
Denny O'Neill.
Yeah. I mean, I had Neil Adams, I had Jim Aparo, I had...
it's tough.
Let's put Denny O'Neill in there.
All right.
I'll make four writers.
All right, characters.
Bob Andrew. Well, I mean, this is weird. Batman?
No, he would never be so obvious as to put himself.
I mean, it's not like this team like
Batman, Batman, Robin, Alfred.
Batman and the three different Robins.
Well, we don't acknowledge Jason.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah.
It's going to be Batman, Alfred, Dick Grayson, and Commissioner Gordon. I mean,
that's a good group. Yeah.
That's a good group. And Josh?
Josh, Vertigo?
Josh is offended that you've shoehorned him in as, you know, being a Vertigo fan only. I don't know, Harvey Pekar four times. Both as character and creator.
And covered. God rest his soul.
you want to do a Flash one, Tom?
Yeah.
Is that too obvious? Sure. Is that too obvious? Yeah.
Nah, well.
It's just four Kanagers.
You did the X-Men, Ron.
I know, it's true.
So for characters, Jay Garrick, Barry, Wally, and Dexter Miles. As creators, you know, Kanagar, Broom, Infantino, and Kerry Bates.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You don't put Wade or Johns on there.
Interesting.
Tom
doesn't exist past 1985, Connor.
No, I mean, they've done a lot. I mean, they've also done a lot. As soon as they put a fifth president up there.
Did you notice that none of our picks were modern creators?
Well, because we're talking about historical characters.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So that makes sense.
And, you know, you got to put the creators of the characters on there.
Yeah, I couldn't put Scott Lobdell up. I couldn't put Scott Lobdell up.
In your case, you didn't put Standard Jack, but that's because...
they got away from that. They ran from that as quickly as they could.
It wasn't. They weren't really revitalized until...
It was Neil Adams, Roy Thomas that breathed life into it. Then it was Cockrum that did it.
Stan Lee couldn't be bothered to come up with a decent origin for them.
Oh God! All right. So our next voicemail has got a question that we've answered before, but not in a while.
Hey, fanboys! This is Anthony from New York. I get my comics through DCBS monthly, and part of the fun is putting them in order, the order in which I'm going to read them. And I was wondering, when you read your books, do you put yours? The ones you're most excited for to read first, or do you save the best for last? Thanks, guys. Love the show. Bye.
So we've addressed this numerous times over the years.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
But Tom hasn't. So I'm curious how Tom reads his books.
I have a complicated algorithm by which I input the number, the issue number, my own personal Cater's index of how much I enjoy the book. And it spits out in order. I take a Fibonacci sequence. Yeah, you know, I read all my DC books first, and then I read all my Marvel books, and then I read my independent books.
Interesting.
That's the opposite of what I do. But I do read all the shared universe books together, just to keep.
I don't do that at all.
Yeah.
What I mean, we talked about this before.
You're the odd man out here, Ron.
I order them. I don't see color. I don't see publishers. I don't. Yeah. I order them in the order of my excitement for them, and with the most excited first, going down to the least excited. So I'm fresh. I've got energy. I'm going to read the book I'm most excited for first, and then by the end of the night, I want to kill myself. And sometimes I don't finish the stack. So yeah.
I read the indies first, all the stuff that's not in the shared world. So that's like all the Image books, Vertigo stuff that's not, or you know, like even Jonah Hex, the stuff that's not connected to the other worlds.
Interesting.
And then I read Marvel, and within Marvel, the order of from least excited to most excited, and then DC, least excited to most excited. But lately, if I've got a big stack and I thought my week they did the pick of the week, I'll just usually read them in a random order of whatever I feel like reading because I'm not in a hurry.
I'm glad we answered this because I didn't know you separated by the shared universe and the publishers. I didn't know that. I thought you just read in least excited to most excited.
No, I read the worlds together.
Yeah. You see, I don't understand how you can read the most excited last because I'm so tired. Because
I get built up to where I sort of get the dregs out of the way and then I build up to what I want to read. But like lately, you know, if there's something big that comes out and everyone's talking about it or it's one of the picks of the week, you know, from one of you guys, and I haven't read my books yet, I usually read that first or something just because...
I can't do it in an excitement level because I'm equally excited for all the books that I get.
I love
there are no dregs. There are no dregs with me.
Oh, God. All right, so we got one more voicemail that I kind of wish we weren't answering.
Hello, Ron, Connor, and Josh. This is Josh from Paul Hackett, Alabama. I was planning on coming to New York for the comic convention, but I wanted to know if you guys could keep us updated on the bed bug situation there in New York, because I heard it's really bad. They're closing down hotels and department stores, and I want to make sure that we're safe when we come up there for the convention. Thank you. Bye.
It's bad. The situation's bad. They're everywhere, and they're huge. As far as I know, the bed bug situation on the East Coast in general, we've just been told not to sleep.
Sleep standing up.
Sleep standing up away from beds to burn your beds. I mean, I don't know. Every place has bed bugs now. I mean, bed bugs are running.
It's a widespread problem that's happening everywhere. First of all, I looked at Pawtucket and I couldn't find it. I don't think it exists.
Pawtucket exists.
Pawtucket. I went to the Alabama website where it lists all the towns in Alabama. It wasn't on there. So I think he's a liar.
Do you think this is someone who's trying to convince people not to?
There is a Pawtucket, Alabama, because CJ, who's 22 and a female on MySpace, lives there.
Okay.
All right. Interesting.
I don't want to ask any more questions about that.
I searched for Paul Hackett on Google.
Sure. It's not bad. I mean, you see it in the news because it's they can put bed bug crisis on the news and talk about it. Like a couple of stores got shut down, but that's just because they had an outbreak. I haven't heard anyone. No one in my actual real life has ever talked about bedbugs.
And the thing is that I feel like that's all. I mean, like it's. I mean, it. Don't live in fear. Just if you get bit by a bedbug, big deal. Whatever. It'll go down.
You can grow. When you grow old, you can tell your kids they got bit by a bedbug in New York City.
Don't let that keep you from going to New York Comic Con. Also, if you're booking your hotel, here's a tip: don't stay at the sketchy place on 12th Avenue. You know what I mean?
It's close to the convention center.
True, yeah, but like, don't
get really good rates on certain things.
Don't stay at the Y. You know, the Sheraton.
Homeless people get along just fine.
It's true, exactly.
Sleep on the streets for a weekend. Yeah. No big deal.
They're teeming with bedbugs. They don't seem to mind.
Oh, yeah. So if you have any... Well, okay, the one thing, though, that we can address is that we're not going to keep you updated on this.
Actually, listen to Tom versus the Flash. I'll keep you updated.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. We're not here... Yeah, so Tom will take care of it. So
we'll have a big map.
Bedbugs in Detroit. Superman will save them. So if you have anything else you want us to keep you updated on, you can call and request it on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Ron mentioned earlier in the show that this is a giveaway, iFanboy giveaway time, August, September, October, all giveaway months. We've got tons of stuff to give away to iFanboy members. You've got to be a member to be eligible for our giveaways. If you go to iFanboy.com, right at the top is a red post showing this month's giveaways, and you can see them in their glorious picture form.
Yes.
Lovely photography. This week is a Scott Pilgrim giveaway in conjunction with Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Yeah. We've got some prizes to give out, including T-shirts and hats and mobile phone skins. Very exciting. We've got two winners. The first winner, who has won despite our no Irish policy, is Timothy O'Brien. Timothy O'Brien has won, and Betsy Lang has won. Each have won the Scott Pilgrim prize packs.
Very cool.
So congratulations.
Yay, Scott Pilgrim. It's
you'll
out.
Be hearing from one of us soon about your win.
Yes.
And hopefully you saw the movie, and if you did, enjoyed it, hopefully.
Wear your shirt with pride. Go see it again. Yeah. And we saw Scott Pilgrim, and if you go back in the feed or go to ifanboy.com, you can hear our review of the movie. Josh Connor and I got together to talk about Scott Pilgrim, the movie, and what we thought of it. So you definitely want to listen to that. And go to ifanboy.com and tell everyone what you thought of Scott Pilgrim. This is the comic movie event of the summer. So let's make sure we all check in and say why we hated it.
Or before like, it goes or away.
Before it goes away, exactly. In addition to that, don't stop there. Go to subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss, which is our podcast every Monday where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out that week that you absolutely don't want to miss. Last week, it was Nick Spencer week at iFanboy. We spoke to Nick about Morning Glories number one. So read Connor's Pick of the Week review, then go listen to the Don't Miss, vice versa,
well,
whatever.
When I posted the Pick of the Week, I saw people say, hey, I didn't even know this book was coming out. Well, yeah. If you'd listened to Don't Miss, you would have known the book was coming out.
And you wouldn't have missed it.
There you go.
Yeah. Next week, Tom's friend, Chris Niesman, is coming back. Your better half, Tom.
Friend is a strong word.
He's talking to Mike Nelson, who wrote the 28 Days Later trade paperback, which is coming out from Boom next week. So that's a very interesting book. If you like the whole 28 Days Later franchise, you're going to want to check that out. So listen to iFanboy Don't Miss. Go subscribe in iTunes.
This is episode 247, which means episode 250 is merely weeks away, and episode 250 is going to be an all-email show.
Jesus.
We did this for episode 150. If you want to go back and listen to that for inspiration, and we're asking for your emails.
And it was drunken, wasn't it?
We're going to do that again. I've got the whiskey all ready to go.
Excellent.
Episode 250 is going to be an all-email show. We're going to talk about the pick of the week and then go right into an all-email show for as long as it goes. I think last time it was 2 hours long, the episode 150. So send in your questions. Put 250 in the subject line. If it's not in the subject line, it won't be used for the show. It'll be used for a regular
show. The number is 250.
Yeah, yeah. Keep sending in emails not for 250 because we'd have to do shows before that.
Yeah.
So send them in. If you want inspiration, go back and listen to 150. Not only is it good for inspiration, it's actually a very funny show. I listen to it.
And it's also these emails can be anything goes. They can be comics. They can be us. They can be relationships, whatever you want. This is it's going to be a long show. We're going to have fun.
We will answer anything. We'll answer everything that comes in. We answered for 2 hours and we were drunk and in some cases, like Ron's belligerent by the end. So
very angry.
Yeah, very angry. Anyway,
you call them fuckers by the end of it. You fuckers. It was a very fun show, but if you haven't listened to the show, go back and listen. But if you need inspiration, do that as well. Episode 250, all email show, so get ready. Hold on to your butts.
Excellent. So you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and go to ifanboy.com where you can read Connor's Pick of the Week review about Morning Glories number one. You can read the Book of the Month review. You can read all the great posts. Every Friday, Mr. Tom Caters writes a wonderful column and reminds me why I'm a bad writer. So you can go read that.
That's always my first line. Ron, bad writer.
Ron, bad writer. But we've got so many great writers on the site writing, so you definitely want to go check it out on iFanboy.com. We've also got a video show that comes out every Wednesday. We've been in the midst of our San Diego Comic-Con coverage. Last week was part two. This week coming up is part three. Honestly, I'm biased, but I think this is our best year yet of San Diego videos. I hope you agree.
Part two was very funny. Check it out.
Part two is very funny. It starts
Mike Romo and Gordon the intern.
Oh, it all starts with that the open with the creepy Hitler in the beginning. Hello. Oh God. Anyway, so go to ifanboy.com. Watch the video. It's fantastic.
There was a mistake in the script. I almost made it.
I skipped it.
I collapsed at the end of a marathon.
There are two.
You
mistakes.
Can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. As I said before, call us our voicemail line 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, marriage proposals, criticisms. What you shouldn't call in with is complicated questions not meant for the show, because we don't check the voicemail every day.
Yes.
So if you want to get us about your membership or something like that, email us. Do not call the voicemail line. Just a tip. And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes for our show, for Tom versus the Flash, for any podcast you listen to. It really helps to write a review on iTunes. That's how people find the show. It really, when people are searching in iTunes for a podcast, the more reviews, the better. So please leave us a review. It takes only a few moments for this show, for the video show, for all of our shows. Thank you very much. And Tom, thank you.
Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of Tom versus the Flash, if you're not listening to that, you're missing out on the best podcast in iTunes.
Yeah, exactly. So, you need to write iTunes reviews for it, so when people look it up and they're like, this is the stupidest idea I've ever seen, they can be convinced that it is, in fact, not stupid.
So you are coming close to the end of the run of The Flash,
I'm
right?
Very close.
Say it ain't so. I never want it to end, Tom.
All good things come to an end, Ron. Oh, I'm sorry. God. There'll be new stuff, more, Aquaman.
I've heard rumors of Aquaman.
There's going to be more stuff.
Oh, excellent. All right, cool.
I just did a reprint issue today where it was a Flash reprint, so I did Weird War Tales. So it was G.I. Robot, nice. Jasper Pepperdine, the Defender of Time and Space, and Creature Commandos.
Nice.
So,
cool.
So, exciting stuff, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. So listen to Tom vs. the Flash. Every Friday, go to ifanboy.com, read Tom's. And Tom, you're on Twitter, right?
Tom Caters.
Okay, cool. So you definitely want to subscribe to Caters World, because it's a laugh a minute.
Caters World. And now I can't think of the newsletter, because I'm trying to think of my old-timey, it's paper. You print it.
It's a pamphlet.
Caters Week. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
One side.
So excellent.
Like a zine.
Well, Tom, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Filling in
Let
for Josh
out of the basement, please.
Yes, exactly.
Oh Josh, don't worry. Josh will be back next week.
All right, so until next week, I am Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Tom, in place of Josh, who's a fan. He doesn't just read Vertigo. With my peacock hands and my tangerine skulls and my grizzly bear face and my voice from Target. The summertime, gonna strut my stuff. I'm gonna strut, strut, going backwards in time with my questionable eyes. And I'm drinking my gray, and I stood on my face. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester.
if you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.